Welcome to room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
Hi, Cecilia.
Hi, Pastor Dave.
How are you doing today?
I am doing just fine. How about you?
Are you sure you're okay?
Well, it is.
The reason I ask this is last time we gathered here in room 4216 with the first part of the lesson, you were pretty sleepy, so I thought I'd better check, see if you're wakey.
Well, as I was starting to say, it is the middle of the afternoon, and you know, there's this wonderful rain and thunderstorm to listen to, so that definitely has my attention.
Well, we'll hopefully keep you awake, and the Word of God certainly will excite you. It did get you going after a while
last lesson,
so let's turn to the book of Exodus and the Word of God and see what He's got to say to us.
So, Pastor Dave, do you remember when we first started studying the Ten Commandments?
Yeah.
And you said that it would just be a couple of lessons.
Yeah.
It was nine.
Yeah.
But how do we wrap up all these Ten Commandments into one nice, neat bundle for our listeners?
Well, I thought we did a good job of introducing the Ten Commandments in that first lesson. Let's go back to listen to that segment again, because it explains why God gave these commandments, which the people kind of already knew, which we kind of already knew, but need to be reminded of.
Why did He give these Ten Commandments? I mean, didn't they know this stuff already?
Well, yes and no. And that's the first thing to point out in general. These people had been among people with other religions in Egypt for so long, they had forgotten a lot of what they had been taught, or they never had been taught. So no, they probably didn't. And don't forget, they're just like you and me in the sense that they're human beings, they were sinful, just like you and me, and that they too will quickly move away from worship of the real God to things that are more earth-based, more flesh-based, more sinful-based, pleasing our own selfish desires. So God gave these Ten Commandments, and actually, by the way, these really were given not as commandments to begin with, they're statements, and they were basically one word. One word.
One word?
Yeah, it Hebrew can do this. Within one word, it can make a statement about you are not idol worshippers. You are not murderers. You are not stealers. For them, it's one word with a prefix and suffix, which makes the statements of who is doing what.
So, in other words, it's not you shall not do this and you shall not do that. It's because you are my people, you are not.
Right. And that's why He gave these, to start that beginning process of tell them who they are. Now, the reason we call them commandments is because even though there were the Ten Statements, we quickly realize we don't do it, do we?
No.
And so they point out the fact that we don't, and therefore they end up to be a command that we are to, and it points out that we don't. And we'll get into more about that later with the Ten Commandments and the usage of them. But for right now, let's just stick with this. It's just statements. Now that they're the new people of God, who they're going to be, their statements, and God's making it clear who they are, differentiating from all the other religions in the world. Well, let's pick up, Cecilia. God had just spoken the Ten Commandments to Moses on the mountain, and he went down to the people. And now we have the people's reaction to what they saw and heard.
When the people saw the thunder and lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain in smoke, they trembled with fear. They stayed at a distance and said to Moses, "Speak to us yourself, and we will listen. Do not have God speak to us, or we will die." Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid. God has come to test you, so that the fear of God will be with you to keep you from sinning." The people remained at a distance while Moses approached the thick darkness where God was. Then the Lord said to Moses,
"Tell the Israelites this: you have seen for yourselves that I have spoken to you from heaven. Do not make any gods to be alongside me. Do not make for yourselves gods of silver or gods of gold. Make an altar of earth for me, and sacrifice on it your burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, traditional peace offerings, your sheep and goats and your cattle. Wherever I cause my name to be honored, I will come to you and bless you. If you make an altar of stones for me, do not build it with dressed stones, for you will defile it if you use a tool on it. And do not go up to my altar on steps, lest your nakedness be exposed on it."
So now that we've finished the Ten Commandments, God giving these ten statements by which the people are to live, God knew that just to do that much and no more was not adequate. We need definition, more laid out, more
boundaries.
Yeah, because after all, these people, remember, they just several months ago were slaves, and they did the bidding of their masters. And so now they were brought out of Egypt through the Red Sea, shown by God through manna from heaven and water from a rock, and now the giving of the commandments. They're a new people, a different people. And God has to help them understand, what does this mean? And so in the next couple chapters, 21, 22, and 23, he's taking specific parts of the Ten Commandments to give some civil direction of how these things are unfolding. And because it's just kind of general, to see, I don't know if we really need to read through these. I'm going to suggest we just move on to chapter 24.
No. There's some stuff in here that's important to discuss, I think.
Okay. Well, what topics do we have in these three chapters? Do you have a list there, I think?
Yes. And the very first one is one I want to talk about. Laws on slaves. Laws on homicide. Laws on bodily injuries. Laws on property damage. Laws on society. Laws on justice and neighborliness. And laws on sacred seasons. And this is just a start.
Yeah, there is more in other parts of the book, but those are dealing with, and we'll get to that. Like Leviticus is all about the ceremonial laws. But these are the civic ones to help people live in a new society.
It also gives us an idea of how the Israelites lived as they traveled.
Okay. All right. We'll take a look at a few of these then.
What does it mean when Moses says that God is coming to the people to test them so that they fear him and do not sin?
You know, I had to do some research on this section here because I was a little bit scratching my head on it too. There's a couple things going on. First, God came with the fire and the smoke and the thunder and the lightning and the trumpets, and they were afraid.
I would be too.
Yeah. And that was the point. God wanted the people to know he's the powerful, mighty one. He wanted them to know, because what's happening here, not just the Ten Commandments that he gave. We talk about many laws that are given. Well, the Ten Commandments are the base foundation. Mm-hmm. And what comes later and throughout the next couple books are then guidelines that help fill out these ten. And in doing so, God is saying, I'm making a covenant with you. I'll be your God. You be my people. My people are like this. And so he's actually forming them into a new culture. Because again, remember, They were slaves. They were under the Egyptians. And the Egyptians had many gods, did many crazy things. And God brought them out of that and is bringing them to a new land, a new God, a new culture. And so God is saying, I am your God. And just so you know, I'm a powerful one. And so he was willing to make them afraid so that when they agree to this a covenant to live by, they knew who they were agreeing to.
They didn't want God, or God didn't want them to love him like we love him today?
In a sense, no. I should say, you're correct. You're correct. He wanted them to know that he is their God and they are his people. He was setting up a new relationship with them. Now, the relationship did have worship with altars, and notice it said from earth, and it could be stones or mud or clay, but he didn't want them to form and fashion anything. And he said, and don't make any gods out of silver and gold, because that's what they did in Egypt. They had multiple gods, mm-hmm. and they did things, and God's trying to say to them, you don't make me. I am who I am. I make you. You are my people. This is the way it's supposed to be. And first and foremost, you need to know that. And so it is a sense of fear. Love comes later. But first they need to know who this God is who is making a covenant with them to be his people.
Okay, hold on, stop right there.
Oh, what?
I can't believe I just read what I read. God says something about, and if you have slaves, do this and do that, you know, kind of giving laws for that.
Mm-hmm.
But the Israelites just came out of slavery. They were enslaved for 430 years.
Yeah.
And God had said, I will bring you out of Egypt, out of slavery. And now, here he is saying things about slaves, and if you have slaves, and do this and do that. Why is he saying that it's okay for the Israelites to have slaves?
Well, a couple thoughts are under my mind. Maybe it's God saying, hey, now it's time for us to get back at the rest of the world for what they did to you.
Oh, I can hardly believe that.
Yeah, God really isn't a revengeful God in that way. No, it's true. Well, from the first time you asked that question, I was able to do some research.
Oh?
Really, when it comes down to it, back in the Old Testament, slavery, it isn't what we hear of in the Civil War where there's abuse. I mean, there is that. But it was more of an economic social status. You've heard of indentured servants?
Yes. We used to have them here in the United States.
We did. And the idea was you work and we get a portion of the proceeds and all. Slavery many times was in the Old Testament like that, especially in the Roman world. And this goes stretching back to this time of Egypt and Israel too. But in the Roman world, we know very well that people held property. They controlled many things, but they're yet considered slaves and not a free person. A free person was one who could vote and had a few
they had
other
citizenship.
Citizenship, mm-hmm. But it didn't mean they couldn't marry or they couldn't travel or they couldn't hold property. Slavery was more of an economic social thing. The other thing too is, even though God said this and that about slaves, it didn't say, hey, you must have slaves.
No.
In fact, you could almost compare it to divorce. In the Old Testament, God permitted a divorce. We're going to find it in Deuteronomy. He says, okay, because you're sinners, you're going to have divorce. You can't stay together. So, okay, if you're going to, here's the rules and regulations.
If you must have divorce,
right.
In other words.
And so, in some ways, it's that way with slavery, too. You can't just, well, and we saw this in after the Civil War, when you dismantle a whole institution of how it worked, putting it back together is very hard.
It was a mess after
it was
the Civil
a big War. Mess, and people took advantage of it. And really, what God is setting up here with these laws, and this is what it comes down to, because that's what happens if you totally dismantle an institution. It's chaos, and people who are power-hungry come in and grab power and abuse. And so that what God is setting up here are guidelines so that people won't be abusive in their power. Because in the same way, couldn't some people say, well, I've been married for 27 years. I've been enslaved for 27 years. Some women talk about being in slavery.
Well, some men do too.
The point being here is it's that thing of usurping power and abuse. And if it's not that, it's an okay economic system if that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's partly why God is letting slavery continue. It's an economic system.
But it's also a parable.
A parable?
Yeah.
Oh, now just a minute. A parable is an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. Okay,
mm-hmm.
The earthly story would be slavery.
Mm-hmm.
People are enslaved. Okay, what's the heavenly meaning here?
Can be summed up in one verse. John 8:36. If the Son, therefore, has made you free, you shall be free indeed.
Yeah. The whole thing of spirituality. God was showing the Israelites, when he brought them out of slavery, what he was going to do, what he was doing for them spiritually.
We are slaves to sin,
huh.
Even today. And yet,
yeah.
Because of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, he has made us free.
Free. And there's other verses that go even one step further. He's made us part of his household.
Mm-hmm.
That not just you're free, okay, walk away, do something. But he says, now you're part of my house. You're my family, which is the opposite of
yeah.
a slave. Oh, yeah, I like that, Cecilia, the whole spiritual aspect. And so God let slavery continue so that because he couldn't stop everything. I mean, you have to stop the world. But he uses that to show us how we are spiritually and how Jesus then would set us free. If you remember, Cecilia, and I hope the listeners do too, we are in the midst of these chapters, and you hit an outline which was really helpful of
mm-hmm.
different types of laws. We just actually talked about the first one about slavery
right.
And what it is. Could you read the list again, please?
Sure. Laws on homicide.
That's number two.
Mm-hmm. Laws on bodily injury. Laws on property damage. Laws on society, laws on justice and neighborliness, laws on sacred seasons.
So let's just take a look at some of these. The second one was on homicides.
Yes.
Basically, it says not if you kill somebody, you're going to be killed.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Go ahead.
But it does say a couple of other things. If you strike your father or your mother,
oh,
you're dead. If
yeah.
you curse your father or your mother, bye-bye.
God here was very strong in protecting the father and the mother. That was a key, integral part of their society. Because if you diss your father, you're dissing God.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, there were two tablets of the law. The first several talked about our relationship with God, and then come the relationship with humans. And at the first of it is God and your parents, authority. And so those were punishable things by death, absolutely. The next one was about injury.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. This is where that phrase, and some of you I'm sure have heard it, eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. It actually goes on further, a hand for a hand.
A wound for a wound.
Technically, this is only supposed to be an injury given to a pregnant woman. But laws of the Israelites expanded this to cover pretty much everything. And here's why. These people didn't have prisons. They're on the move. Remember, they were picking up their tents every once in a while and going to another spot. God would lead them on a journey. For 40 years, they were traveling through the wilderness.
I hadn't thought of that.
And so they couldn't just, that was a bad thing, so let's give you 1 year in prison. Well, he couldn't. They're on the move. And so the punishment was usually very exact, very quick, and therefore the eye for eye, tooth for a tooth.
So really, if someone's hand got cut off, the person who did it who cut off the other person's hand. Their hand was literally cut off too.
Literally cut off, yes, yes. And the point of that was, be careful in what you do when you get angry. And it was, everybody saw Joe Schmo, or should I say Yaakov Nishnach, or whatever his real name would be, gets his hand cut off because he hurt somebody, whoa, it's going to make them sit up and realize, you know, if I'm not careful, that's going to happen to me. And so it slowed actions and injuries way down. And really, that was the point of capital punishment, is you take a life, your life is taken. It's supposed to stop you from doing it. And when they were on the move, it was pretty quick justice. So in these groups of laws that help define society and their civil living, we first had which law?
Slavery.
Slavery. The second one?
Homicide.
Homicides. Third one?
Bodily injury.
Bodily injuries. And then the fourth one is?
Property.
Yeah. And you saw a very interesting verse with this one, Cecilia. Go ahead and read that, because it really capsulizes what this is all about.
Verse 5.
This is of chapter 22, okay, of Exodus.
If a man grazes his livestock in a field or vineyard and lets them stray, and they graze in another man's field, he must make restitution from the best of his own field or vineyard.
So, first thing to point out is restitution. Paying back. So if somebody takes something from somebody, a property, and here it was an example of cattle, and he knowingly lets them stray, well, then he has to pay back what the cattle ate. Restitution. But Cecilia, you saw something else in that.
I saw that it's not just what the cattle ate. He can't just go out and pick some wheat or whatever. He has to pay back from the best of what he has.
In order that the guy equally be paid and not cheapened out. But it also points to something else, which is amazing.
It is.
And that is that God made restitution for us. In a way, we're injured. We're damaged goods because of sin. And God paid recompense.
Recompense. And yet we were the ones who strayed into God's vineyard. When we sin, we do damage.
And God paid his very best, his very own son, to pay for the damages we did.
Who said, basically, this is my sin now. It's not yours.
Yeah, it's my sin now, not yours. I like that, Cecilia. That's a perfect example of what the gospel in a nutshell is. It's my sin now, not yours. That's what Jesus did when he went on the cross. He was perfect. He had none, but he took ours. Awesome. Awesomeness. Yeah. Well, Cecilia, I think we're going to have to stop for today.
Oh, but we still have 3 laws left.
Yeah, 3. I'm sorry, but you'll have to come back next time. And you know, Cecilia, I'm glad. Remember at the beginning, I wasn't sure if you were awake. You stayed awake the whole time.
Amazing that I could stay awake. Well, you have problems staying awake sometimes.
Yeah. Instead, we'd like to hear from you.
Yeah,
you've been staying
awake.
You
need to stay awake.
And give us recompense. We've talked your ear off, so now talk our ear off. You can do so at
info.
I-N-F-O.
At not-alone.
N-O-T dash thing and then
A-L-O-N-E.
That's right. Thank you.
Dot.
N-E-T. And remember,
we are not alone.
Do come back again to room 4216.
Credits. Our sincere thanks go to Terry Nord and Robert Vaughn for their interlude music.